Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 26, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We were sailing along on Moonlight Bay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I'm sorry. We just had a lot of fun here before the show. Fun might be the wrong word, but, you know, the stuff that we do off air that doesn't make it on the show or no one sees, it's a shame.
Yeah, we should have it all recorded and then have, like, a raw Ante Up show that isn't tied to any sponsorships and nobody knows that it's out there. It's just for the underground listeners and let them hear what happens behind the scenes sometimes.
You know, as crazy and stupid as our listeners already think we are, if they heard some of this stuff, I think they would feel a lot better about their lot in life, wouldn't they?
I think so. But right now, we're going to be going on a cruise soon, so we're getting all geared up. This weekend, we're getting the truck and loading the tables and heading to Port Canaveral.
I'm already packed, man. I even got my luggage tag, my little Monarch of the Seas luggage tag on my luggage list.
Oh, my God.
I am ready to go.
I'll probably pack Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I know how you pack. You put four articles of clothing in a backpack.
That's about all I need, man. So I don't need luggage tags or none of that. I just
Some of us are not naturally pretty as you are and need to work on our wardrobes. But yeah, we'll be on the Ante Up Poker Cruise next week with a lot of our listeners, too. You know, Lee Childs will be on there, and I think we have at least half a dozen other podcast listeners that are coming.
That's really cool.
Which is going to be fun, so we'll have fun there. And, of course, folks know what that means. We are getting off the ship Friday and driving back and doing a lot of manual labor, so don't look for next week's show until probably Saturday, and we'll be taping it live on the cruise ship, which means all the normal stuff we like to do.
Is there any other way you can tape it? Can we tape it dead? I mean, I don't understand when people say that, tape it live on the ship.
You know what? You know, if I think if we bring up the discussion we just had before the show again, one of us will end up dead, and as long as it's recording, then yeah, you can record it dead.
Yeah, record it dead. I'll be like, Scott, are you there? Scott. Scott. because of the way the show's breaking down and when we're doing it, though, we're going to give O'Malley a vacation. Must be nice. You work a couple of weeks and you get a vacation already.
Yeah, yeah. It's I'm sure he's like, oh, where are you guys sending me? It's a staycation, O'Malley.
We'll give him a couple of weeks off, and we'll bring it back when we're back in the studio, and or at least in our offices, and doing the show then. But you know, it's been real popular. People have been embracing it, and I'm glad we brought him in.
Absolutely. And you know what I'm looking forward to most for the cruise?
What's that?
And it's not to see which one of us orders more entrees at dinner every night, which is always fun for the entire group.
Yeah.
It is the fact that I will not have to play a single hand of No Limit Hold'em.
You won't have to, but you will.
Quite convinced that we're going to be able to get, as we always do, some good Omaha games or horse games or limit games or something other than crappy No Limit Hold'em, which I had to suffer through Tuesday night at my once a month get out of the house, play poker, improve our pages night. Went over and played 1-2 No Limit. Did not have the success that I have come to expect from the one winning session I've had doing this. And but you know what? I'll tell you what gave me the red ass this time, Chris.
So what, it turns you into a monkey?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Can we pass a law banning button straddles? Can we get the tea party together, you know, spell button straddle for them so they know what I mean, and, you know, get some kind of movement on this? You know, I've made my peace with a normal straddle, all right? And maybe normal is not the right word. But, you know, the typical, it is, under the gun, puts the money out and straddles, you know? All right, I'm fine. I made my peace with that. But this button straddle crap has got to end. All I did is went and go there, not pay a lick of attention to the game, and be able to play. And instead, all of these ass clowns are putting button straddles out every fourth hand, and I'm proofing my pages, and the dealer has to bark at me. Oh, hey, Scott, it's your small blind. You're first to act this hand. Why am I first to act? I am the small blind. Button straddle. Gosh, dash, darn it. Why?
Hey, who was the first person that said, hey, I'm on the button. I'm going to put some money out for free. And you're going to let me do it. Who was the one that said, that should be normal in everyday cash game practices, and it should be accepted, and it should be a rule, and it makes perfect sense? Who was the person that said that, Scott?
You know, that's an excellent point. That is an excellent point. And, I am not what's known as a savvy poker player, all right? So I'm unfrozen caveman lawyer when it comes to this little clowning around that people do at the game. I have begrudgingly understood why people do what I call the normal straddle. But you're right. If you're on the button, why are you putting money in that you don't have to?
And why do they think that that's legal to skip five people and put money in for the heck of it? Or whatever
it is. Well, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But all right, help me through this here. All right, so, the under-the-gun straddle, the traditional one, you can avoid acting first. You get to act last. All right, that makes sense to me. I still don't like it. I still hate you if you're doing it. But that makes sense to me. Because now you get to act last.
Yeah, and it's a natural progression of the raises, right? Yeah.
But you're right, button, you are already not, you're not technically acting last. I guess you're making yourself act last. That's really the only advantage is you're forcing the blinds to act first, so you guarantee you're acting last. Is that really that big of an advantage that it's worth putting $4 cold out for? I'm being serious now. I mean, I was being funny.
Well, I know, but it's not to me. And I think, to me, it's not worth it for that one round. Because it's great to have position if you know what your cards are or you know who's in the hand. But when you don't know and you've already surrendered $4 just to get it for that one betting round, and you're going to have it for the rest of the betting rounds, why is it so important then? And again, I just don't get who would say, hey, I'm going to put money out here and you're going to say it's okay and we're going to get a ruling on it. Who was the first person to do that? It just drives me crazy.
Yeah, you're right. There had to be someone you're like, and I guarantee you, Chris, I absolutely guarantee you it was a drunk player. There's somebody there that was just minding his business, not paying attention, saw some idiot straddle onto the gun and go, hey, I want to do that, and did it, and then got so drunk that they didn't realize they were under the gun and pushed $4 out when they were on the button, and the dealer said, what are you doing? And the guy said, I'm straddling. And the dealer said, you can't, you know what? All right, fine. If you want to put $4 out of the button, you go right ahead, Drunky McDrunkerson. That is, I'm sure that's exactly what happened here.
And what bothers me, too, is depending on where the moon is in the sky and what casino you're in, then you don't know who acts first when there's a button straddle either. Some make it the person next to the small blind or the big blind. Some people make it the small blind. It just depends on what. You can literally go from one casino to the next and they have different rules within their own. You know, it's crazy. I hate it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of drunks, you'll be happy to hear I was not the drunk at the table on Tuesday night. Didn't have a lick of the sauce the entire night myself. And but this woman sat down. I was in the two seat. This woman sat down with me next to me in the one seat. And it took me about 8 seconds because I'm pretty slow to realize this woman was drunk off her knockers.
Man.
And so she started just what I call grab bag betting.
Oh, yeah.
It comes to her, and she just, like she's playing the big choice machine at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
Just takes her hand down there, grabs a big bunch of chips, and throws them in the pot.
When would you have an occasion to be at Chuck E. Cheese?
Well, I have a niece and nephew.
And you took them to Chuck E. Cheese?
And Stalkers.
Oh my god.
Well, you know, there's a big choice machine in a lot of places.
Okay.
I just use Chuck E. Cheese because it's well known and they're sponsoring the show.
I thought maybe Dave and Buster's or something, you know. I didn't realize you went
Dave
to Chuck E.
Cheese. Dave
and
Buster's way too expensive.
Okay.
Yeah, way too expensive. All right, but you know what I mean? There's kind of crane bet. Boom.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, everybody starts giggling and stuff because it's every hand. And the problem with that is that you need to have either a good hand or toughest nails persona to play Ben against a player like that.
Yeah.
Right? You've got a, and there's one guy that made a call on the end with fourth pair and took down a huge pot from her because she had nothing. That is tough to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
You're sitting there like, all right, I know this woman's crazy. She's just betting. She's not even paying attention. I've got a pair. But what if this is just one of the times that she's not paying attention and happens to have one of the other three cards on the board that's higher than mine?
Yeah.
Then I'm out, you know, $75 here in a 1-2 game. On the flip side, then you just got to wait for a good hand and hope that she bets. And this is exactly what happens. And this is the only time I giggled. The entire table was giggling the entire time. There was a chance where a woman had a big hand, and pre-flop she shoved like 50 in, big stack. And he gets around to the woman, she's like, 50? Oh gosh, I can't call that. Pushes her cards into the muck. So that's what happens. Is, you know, she wants to be the one betting big, and then you have to raise her, and then you can't play, you can't push her around.
Yeah,
you got to respond to her. So, but what was most funny about this is that I sat there and watched, you know, as I craned my eye up in between proofing pages, and I believe of the 9 people at the table, now remember she's one of them, so take her out, 7 of them reloaded when she sat down, and not Jeez. Because they went felt, they felt it, they were like, she kept winning pot after the pot.
Oh my god.
So she was up to like 3 or 350, and everybody there was salivating, as our good friend Scotty Wynn will say, attacking wildebeest. They all like, gosh, I want that money, and I have to have money in front of me to get all that money.
Yeah.
It was really interesting, I think. And then the final funny thing is, finally I relented. I'm like, all right, fine. Here's another Ben. I'm going to get me a piece of this. As soon as I reloaded, the chip runner came over and was like, hey, ma'am, I got your 2-5 seat. You want it? 2-5? Hell yes! And everybody's like, oh my gosh, no, don't let her leave!
Oh no.
And people are talking about wanting to go to 2-5 now because they want to get that money. Now, then she leaves, and then what happens is we have a 1-2 table with like $4 gajillion sitting on it. All to get one woman's stack who's not there anymore.
Oh my god. That is a great story.
And you know, her phone kept going off, and of course, you know. And she would go, stop it! Push her phone. This went like 40 times, stop it! I wanted to talk to her. She really wanted to talk to me, and I kept ignoring her watching the Rays game because, you know, I can't understand drunk unless I'm drunk. And I wanted to say, you know, ma'am, I am not an expert on cell phones. I don't have one of these whippity-doo iPhones, but my guess is I have never seen a phone that rings when it's turned off. So if you keep going, stop it! Stop it! I think I have a solution to your problem. But I didn't want to talk to her about it, so.
Well, you know what she was drinking?
Bud Light.
Oh, man.
I know it might have been Miller Lite. Some kind of light. But lots of lights.
Lots of lights.
Thousands of points of lights at this table.
No new taxes. Man.
Well, you know, I think we'll see her resurface again because I'm pretty sure she's going to be staking David Chino Ream in the next Epic Poker League event. massive amount of money that she had. Had, I should say. We did see her leave the 2-5 game broke. So all those rich guys got all of our money. Have you seen this? David Chinarewa, as we mentioned on the show last week, won the inaugural Epic Poker League. $1 million.
Yeah.
Immediately after there were whispers that he owed everybody on the planet some money. We're trying hard on the PokerCast now not to talk in rumors.
Right.
So we very respectfully just ignored it last week. Can't ignore it this week because the Standards and Ethics Committee, and I'm already giggling, I mean, it seems like such a formal thing for poker anyhow. The Standards and Ethics Committee of the Epic Poker League has put Reem on probation. Not sure if it's double secret yet. Just probation right now. for casting League in bad light based on these personal financial obligations. He has to repay all his outstanding debts and communicate to the league on his progress, or he'll be suspended from play. And a very interesting interview about it on our website, andyatmagazine.com, from our partner, Poker News, that talked to actually a member of the Standards and Ethics Committee. And it sounds like, and he confirmed, that there were people lined up at the cage, Chris.
Yeah, that's what it sounded
like. To get their money back,
yeah.
And some were pretty boisterous, and... And it looks like, through sifting through all the thing, that Reem walked away with, at best, probably $100,000 half a million after he left. Wow. Totally brutal. I think that you can win $1 million and net 10% of it. But, yeah, that's what happens, I guess, when you owe people a bunch of money and then parcel out pieces of you to an extreme.
It's so weird. You know, I applaud them having a standards and ethics committee because they don't want their EPL to be tarnished in any way, but to regulate it. It's so, I mean, there are so many things that happen in the poker world behind the scenes, and you know, who's to stop player A from going up to them and saying, "Hey, he still owes me money," and then he says, "No, I don't owe him money. I paid him the money." Now someone could be, you know, screwing with him, you know, or with the league, or, you know, I mean, how are they going to verify all this stuff? It's so odd.
That was the best question I thought the Poker News reporter asked in this was, how do you know how much this guy owes?
Yeah.
And, you know, the answer, obviously, you can go read the answer for yourself. I didn't quote it on their notes here, but, you know, they've taken stock of folks that have contacted them already before this. I don't know what they do about, you know, Johnny Come Latelys.
Yeah.
They say, hey, sorry. You know, you came too late. You know, we're not going to worry about that debt. I don't know. But, you know, what was a little bit also interesting about this is that, you know, they have this expansive standards and ethics policy for all their players, right?
Yeah.
And it clearly said that nothing you did before the Epic Poker League started should affect you. Which, of course, makes sense to me because, you know, how can you... It'd be like, you know, a cop pulling you over and arresting you for something you did 10 years ago, which wasn't illegal then, but is illegal now.
Yeah.
So I get that, and they really were put to a test with this because a lot of these debts were incurred before the Epic Poker League, but they made a special secret whatever thing because, you know, obviously the first tournament's in the books and all of a sudden all anybody's talking about is Gina Reem not being able to pay his debts, so they had to kind of change midstream there. But, you know, the other thing, too, is, and I mentioned I giggle a little bit, and I'm not picking on the Epic Poker League at all. They're doing things very officially here, but it seems to me a little Yale-ish or Harvard-ish for a standards and ethics committee to convene and have a meeting over poker. Am I wrong?
It's a new day and age, Scott. You know, a lot of things can happen to tarnish how they make a buck, and... This is going to be on CBS and everything, and they don't want people on there that are going to give them a black eye, I guess. And maybe that's the way it goes. You know, it's not poker anymore. It's a business. You know, it's not just, hey, let's just go sit down and play 2-5. This is big business, big money, and big reputations out there. And I think they want to make sure it's, you know, I mean, I'm sure NASCAR has something like that, you know, and it's legitimate. You know, and all these other sports.
Well,
so they want to
sure
be legitimate.
The PGA does, right? I mean, and I guess that's why I'm giggling is they're trying so hard to beat the PGA of poker here that sometimes I don't know whether stuff really fits. And I'm not telling them they shouldn't do this. It seems a little odd to me from an outside kind of standpoint. You know, if you go up to a random person and then say, hey, this new poker league has a standards and ethics committee, I'm guaranteeing you 4 out of 5 dentists are going to giggle. Like, poker, why do you need a standards and ethics committee?
Yeah, the other thing, too, is it gives them a little more backing for wanting to eliminate a player from a league that is giving them a black eye. You know, yeah, you can always refuse service to people, and it looks sort of, you know, it looks sort of underhanded if you just don't want somebody for no reason. But this way, you have something to back you up to want to say, hey, look, you can't be in our league anymore because we have this in place and you're violating it. You know, I'm just saying there's some regulation to this, and I just
and I'm not
appreciate
saying
that.
Get rid of it. Because, I mean, here's the real difference between this and other things is there is money being, these prize pools are being funded in part from sponsors of the league. So this isn't like the World Series of Poker where all the money comes from the players. So, you know, and that's exactly what they're saying here. If, you know, because one of the questions was, why does Chino Ream care? Well, why does he feel like he has to pay back this money just to get in the good graces of the Epic Poker League? And the answer is, well, you know, he's qualified for this. He's obviously tops of the leaderboard now.
Right.
And he could qualify for this $1 million free roll. That seems to be a pretty good incentive for us for him to go on the straight and narrow. And that's right. So, yeah. I mean, if you want a shot at that kind of money, you got to play by the rules, you know, including the logo policy, which I railed on last week. You know, if you don't want the money, you don't play. So, I mean, I get that. I'm fine with that. It just seems a little... I wish they would have came up with a... Maybe that's what it needs. It needs a less formal name. Instead of the Standards and Ethics Committee.
The Goodfellas the Committee.
Yeah. Something like that. You know, hey, the don't F up. Ooh, you're in trouble now, Committee. Something like that. It'd be more fun, but, you know, whatever. All right, well... this whole thing prompted some interaction on our Facebook page at facebook.com/AnnieUpMagazine. And one of our longtime listeners, Gary Rawson, wrote in and he said, just thinking a random thought here. If some of these poker players are so good, Chris, why do they have to be backed? Couldn't they raise the money by playing some cash games? Something I never understood.
Well, man. Well, I mean, there's a couple of reasons why. One, it's the variance. You think about it. If you had 10 of your friends playing in a tournament and it's 100 players in the tournament and you all got a piece of each other and there's a 10% chance that, you know, you're going to cash, you know, that cuts down on the losses a lot. So they like to spread themselves out. And then it also helps pay for your own entries and things like that. Plus, some people don't have that money to even play the cash game level to get into. If it has a $20,000 buy-in, that's a huge amount of cash. But if you have somebody taking $5,000 and another person paying $5,000, and, you know, I mean, now you only have to come up with 10. It's just, it's a lot easier on the bankroll, and yeah, you can win in cash games. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to find a game that you're going to pocket 20 grand cash from that you can go into this event. You know, there's a lot, mostly it's variance, though. These guys just want to be able to have some sort of insurance that they're going to make some money off of every event one way or another and not have to pay for it in full as well.
Well, I mean, a lot of it, I mean, it's one of these questions I could throw back at you, you know, hey, if you're so good at your job, why did you have to take out a loan to buy a house?
Exactly.
House is so expensive, you know, it doesn't mean that you couldn't eventually afford it, but if you waited until you could afford it, you would be dead.
You'd be homeless for 10, 15 years.
You know, if you get a good player, you can put him in a $500 buy-in game. There's a limit to how much he can make. You put that same player in a $500,000 game, now all of a sudden you can make a lot of money. But you got to be able to stake him and get him in there.
Yeah.
I'm not pushing for anybody to back anybody or anything like that, but I think that's really it. It's not so much... I don't think it has anything to do with skill, really. It's more of a efficiency thing.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is, like I said, they when they do get backed, a lot of people back each other and stuff, too, because they want to just make sure that they increase their chances of winning. Think about it. Look how it happened. I mean, Chino got backed, and he won $1 million. And everybody got they got 10%. They got 100 grand, you know, for giving him whatever it was to get him into the tournament. I guess the buy-ins. I think there is still a buy-in on these things, right? But it's just
Yeah. It's
just, so, I mean, let's imagine it was a $20,000 buy-in, and you gave him $2,000. You made 100 grand for giving him 2 grand. You know, and if you gave 5 guys, you know what I mean? So you're making money one way or the other by backing a lot of horses or whatever they say.
Well,
so.
And the reverse of that, too, is, you know, in that scenario, the player that's taking the money from people, now if he takes a $2,000 piece of action from someone, now he only has to come up with $18,000 himself.
Yeah.
You know, so it might be, he might be happy saying, let's say he ends up selling half of those shares. He might be happy winning $500,000 in an event that he couldn't have entered without this help.
Yeah.
Even though he would have won the whole million had he bought it himself. You know, so you got to think of it that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know, we got a mailbag this week.
Excellent.
And I like this mailbag because I sort of relate to it a little bit. He says, you know, with online kind of mostly going away, He wants to know, this is from Nick, and he says that he wants to know if anybody's ever played that Zynga poker app. I guess it's pretty popular on Facebook, right? I don't do Facebook, so...
It's amazingly popular.
He says it's free, but you can buy additional chips. And he tried it, but he eventually had to erase the app. Every time he folded 9-deuce offsuit, 2-pair would flop. I don't know if that's every time.
Not every time.
Memory there. But, of course, since it is free, no one folds preflop anyway. I felt the play was causing more damage to my game rather than keeping my skills honed for when I could get into a real money game. I ended up chasing more than I should if it were a real money game when the odds weren't there. Any thoughts? Now, a couple of things. One, I used to, when I first started playing, I used to do just like everyone else thinks they should do, and that's get into the play money games on... I started on Poker Room, remember way back when?
Oh, yeah, with the big boss hog guy.
Yeah, all the cool characters, yeah. And they had, for the while there, they had Teddy KGB in the...
The woman that was... the well-endowed one.
Yeah. So they had all those cool characters, but I used to play on there for play money a lot, and till I got used to, you know, the style of the game and the tactics and everything. But I know what he's talking about, where, you know, you'd play hands that you normally wouldn't play, or you'd chase draws, or you'd call all-ins that you normally wouldn't call, and I felt like I overcame that when I played for real money, but I do see that practice, you know, makes perfect, but in this sense, you know, it could also, you know, like there's, they had that memory, you know, and they say muscle memory when you're doing a golf swing or whatever, you know, this could literally lead to bad habits to you, because maybe you're playing a low limit, no limit game or something, and you're like, it's only, you know, 50 cents or whatever it is that you're playing at the limit, and you start making mistakes and not sound decisions. So I do think that playing money can hurt you. I don't know if it hurt my game, because I think once I started playing for money, in the beginning I was winning like all the time. So, of course, there were worse players online back then. But I was winning consistently back then. So I don't know if it would, you know, if what kind of player Nick is. But I think that it's not wise to play for free money if you are used to playing for money. And I don't think it's wise. I mean, you could try out different things, but really, the people playing for play money, what do they care? You know, they just don't care. And if they don't absolutely care, then you can't make them sweat or bluff them or, you know, or whatever, and you're going to get into some bad habits. That's how I feel. I don't think that it's worth... I mean, you can have fun with it and stuff, but just don't take anything you do seriously, you know?
Yeah, and this is a little different because it's free, but you can buy... you can actually buy chips, which is an amazing freaking business model. You know, hey, buy more chips.
Yeah.
they're not worth anything. I really wish I would have been Mr. Zynga and came up with it. So there probably are more serious people playing on here than maybe like, your basic free Yahoo poker application. But the bottom line is, if you have 9 people at a table and not all 9 of you are playing it seriously, that one person is going to mess you up.
Yeah.
Exactly like this drunk woman that we played with on Tuesday. It just messed up everybody's game because you couldn't play normally because you had to be afraid that she was going to, you know, reach down and pick up a stack of greens instead of reds and put it in there. And now you're paying a big thing. So I, even though it's a little better than that, I don't think it's good enough. But, you know, I will say this. The one thing, if you're forced to play this, and I'm guessing that Nick is essentially forced to play this because he doesn't have any other options where he lives, which is why he's playing it. What I would do is work on specific parts of your game. You know, maybe just play pocket pairs, and not worry about the actual mechanics of how it works out, but just watch the overall game and how the flops come out. And you can still learn a lot, I think, from these games. You just have to do it in a very limited fashion.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the point I was making was, you know, you can have fun with it, but really just don't rely on it to prove your theories or whatever, because that's just not going to work. And, you know, one other thing, too, is just to remember that this isn't a regulated sort of, you know, online experience where there are security measures in place and, you know, people could be sitting there, you know, cheating, you know, who knows? And so you're thinking, how could that guy have called me, you know, it's play money or whatever, but who knows? Most of the time, too, these are family members sitting around playing with each other on this thing, I'm assuming.
Yeah, right.
So, you know what I mean? So it's not regulated, so you don't know if that every time you flop two pair with nine deuce really was a true random generator because it's not a algorithm that was approved by the Kanawaki gaming, you know, whatever. So, you know, I just can't hold any stock in Zynga. I wish I did have stock in Zynga, but I can't hold any stock in the actual experience. I'll hold your
stock for you.
But really, just you know, take it with a grain of salt and don't think too heavily on the outcomes that you're experiencing. And I'm glad he got rid of the app, really, because it could be detrimental.
It's probably the best thing.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, well, we appreciate you mailing it in. We are going to send you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro Hand History Analysis Program for single or mixed games from element26.net. No idea whether it works on Zynga, but it probably should at this point, since Zynga is going to take over the online poker world at some point. But email your questions to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and you too might win some great swag, like an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. You can only win the uncut sheets by calling into our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailing us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. But don't forget, you can buy the cards in the Annie Up store at antiupstore.com. And we'd love to have resume some hotline calls, but people are a little sheepish on the phone now.
I'm starting to wonder if we didn't like mention a number on like a few shows in a row or something. Because why didn't no one call at us? Don't we got the love out there? We're the number one podcast on checkraise.com.
Well, you know, it's they're getting ready to get their kids ready for school and stuff, and you know, maybe we need a text line because all the kids now seem to be texting. Yeah, you know, one of my friends on Facebook the other day was, I can't wait for the world for voicemail to be eliminated. Don't leave me a message. I'm not going to listen to it.
Wow. I don't know.
How am I supposed to communicate with you?
I don't know if I want that world.
How about you answer the phone?
Don't text me.
Yeah.
I don't want any texts.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe we need to change the hotline to text line.
And let them text Scott.
That'd be an amazing... Can you imagine me trying to read text on the air? I can't even read properly spelled English on the air, let alone text shorthand and autocorrect.
All right, well, we do have a call to four come in, and it's from our friend Ben. I've played poker with him a handful of times at JLB Sox's home game a couple times, and he came down to play in our home game with Jason. Good guy, and he's up in Connecticut, and he says he was playing a tournament in the local casino when a new dealer came to the table with about 9 to 10 minutes left at the 300-600 level with 100 antes. He folded under the gun, and a short stack to his left limped with a 1K chip. He said there were a few other callers, including another person who tossed in a 1,000-unit chip. The dealer starts making change and starts putting stacks of chips together and rolling them across the table. The short stack had his stack scattered everywhere. Then the dealer realizes he made the wrong change as he didn't know the level. Needless to say, it turns into a mess with the hand now ending less than a minute remaining in the round. I put out my big blind and antes start being collected. The dealer hears blinds are up next hand from the floor and he says, okay, 400, 800 now. I make a comment that this is ridiculous and we should have had more hands if he was more efficient. He immediately calls the floor saying that I am asking for another hand at the previous level. The floor agrees with the dealer before I explain the general incompetence during the last hand. The table starts agreeing with my statements. Now, of course, time is being wasted at the new level. Should I have said anything? Just shut up? Should the dealer have been reprimanded? Or would this have been done in private? And he says, you're a friend from the Nutmeg State. What do you think, Scott?
One, I don't know why people keep promoting nutmeg outside of eggnog season. Is there any use for eggnog or nutmeg other than an eggnog?
I think you put it in pumpkin pie, and it's a great spice, man.
Mm, okay. I just want to be sure that you guys don't drink eggnog like 12 months a year out there.
No. We're also the Constitution State, so... Be careful what you say.
Okay. Yeah, you're constituted. All right. All right. This is what our Antioch Poker Cruise Poker Room Manager Jody Russell says. You paid to be in this tournament, and you have a right to say something. Just remember that poker makes us emotional sometimes, and we need to be calm and not verbally abuse the staff when we speak to them. That said, you should never feel like you should just shut up, unless you were being really disruptive and being asked by the room staff to quiet down. As a player, you should never take it on yourself to reprimand a dealer. It's okay to express to them that you're unhappy with their performance without being too emotional. They will hear it. The best thing to do in a situation like that is to go to the person in charge and speak to them about it in a calm manner. They will appreciate the opportunity to help improve the performance of their staff. Mistakes happen sometimes. That's why it pays to watch what the dealer is doing and ask questions when we see questionable things. There is no need for the dealer to roll chips to see the players. As cool as that looks, it's unprofessional and should never be allowed. Additionally, the players at this table should have already known the correct change and stopped the dealer as soon as the incorrect change was being handed out. But what really jumps out to him, Chris, about the situation is this. TDA rule number 18, titled New Limits, states, when time has elapsed in a round, a new level is announced by a member of the tournament staff. The new level applies to the next hand. A hand begins with the first riffle. Riffle means shuffle. If an automatic shuffler is being used, the hand begins when the green button is pushed. The correct procedure for collecting antes is for the dealer to shuffle the deck completely, then collect the antes before cutting the deck and dealing. In this situation, the antes were being collected. That means the shuffle was complete and the hand had already begun. The level should not have increased until the next hand.
Hmm. Interesting.
Always a lot there. He never, like, you know, just answers yes or no.
And that's good. That's why we have him on the show. That's why we have him running our room.
You know, folks, the first thing I want to say is the whole chip rolling thing, because I hate this
team. Yeah, I do. I hate it.
All right. Now, I know that sitting in the box for 6 hours a day or 8 hours a day or whatever can get tedious. All right. And you're trying to entertain yourself. But the whole chip rolling thing, come on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because what happens is it's like, you know, you're trying to shoot that, you're playing waste paper basketball golf, you know?
Yeah.
You come up with a piece of paper, and you're like, ooh, I missed, ah, and you keep trying until you get it. And that's exactly what the dealers that do this, they're trying to, it's like a game to them. They want to roll it and see where they can get all the chips to you without them scattering like it happened in this situation. And if it doesn't, then they just go, ooh, sorry, and it's a big fun and games for them.
Yeah.
Well, it's not for me when I got to, like, restack my chips. It was funny, too, is on Tuesday I was playing with a couple dealers, and they were talking about how they sometimes like to knock a stack over when they're pushing. Somebody wins a big all-in pot from, like, three people, and they're shoving the stacks that they like to knock one over just to make the player have to stack them up.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that. Why, you know, like, you want to get a tip.
It's entertaining for them.
Yeah, good. You can be entertained by knocking my chips over, and I'll be entertained by the money I keep by not giving you extra dollar that
year.
No,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. So,
you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, the whole chip rolling thing has got to end.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, if this was me, you know, again, I'm not a loud, boisterous person at the table, probably much to my detriment. I would have gotten up and walked over to the floor at the next break and said, hey, you know what? I'm playing a tournament here. This dealer just isn't here today. You know, can you talk to him? You know, no big deal. You know, that's how I would approach it. I don't know if I would be bold enough to say, yo, moron. Start dealing right. But that's fine. I mean, as Joey says, you have a right to say something. It's just how you say it.
Yeah, don't be abusive with it. Just make your point. And don't. And he said don't reprimand the dealer because that's not your job. You get someone else to do it for you.
Well, the other thing, too, is I don't want to tick the dealer off ever because, you know, even though the dealer shouldn't be making a lot of decisions or doing things themselves, they still have some power, right?
I guess so, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a waitress. I don't want to be going in a restaurant and ticking off a waitress. Because you never know what I'm going to be biting into, you know. It's a little different than the dealer, but I mean, I would just rather not make an enemy out of him. I would rather, you know, have the floor be the heavy on it.
Absolutely. That's why the floor is there, too.
But, you know, this new hand starting thing, you can tell, again, this is what I think we see consistently with Jody's stuff, is you know you're in a good room when this stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, when you have good dealers that say, hey, limits just went up, next hand. I've already shuffled. We're already getting ready to play this one. We're still 300, 600 this one, but just so you know, next hand's 400, 800.
Yeah.
And doing that to clarify it to the table because, you know, half the people will hear 400, 800, half people hear 300, 600. And I think it's great that a dealer takes the bull by the horns and explains it so there's no confusion over what's going on.
Yep.
This situation
absolutely.
That obviously did not happen. It was like, oh, okay, new limit, so I wasn't paying attention. Okay, let's pull it in. You just tell me what to do. You tell me when the deal and who wins the pot, and I'll just take your tips. You know, I hate that.
You know, we got, I was wondering, maybe we should get, like, Yngwie Malmsteen on the show to take his guitar and go up to his Marshall stack and make that little feedback noise for us. I mean, that'd be a cool way to introduce our feedback segments. What do you think?
Cord, are you going to tell me who that person is?
He's like one of those virtuoso guitarists. He used to play like classical guitar and a heavy metal guitar, and he was really good. He was pretty sick.
Does he play any Taylor Swift?
He might now. You know, I don't know. When I was, you know, 15, he was playing some serious licks, but maybe now he's calmed down and playing backup studio guitar for Taylor Swift. I don't know. But anyways, our feedback section comes from Christy. She said, I wanted to thank you for all the great information you passed on to us listeners. I guess she must have meant to send this to another show.
Blushing!
So I really love playing poker, but I have not really played seriously in a casino, being that the closest one to me is in Connecticut. Again, Connecticut comes up on the show.
Yeah, this is a nutmeg special here.
Nutmeg
today.
Surprise.
I'm going to have a glass of eggnog. Apparently a slice of pumpkin pie.
I have been playing in our local bar poker league, reading your recommended books, and of course listening every week, as well as listening to all your older podcasts for the first time.
Don't do that.
This weekend, I took a gambling bus down to Foxwoods with a bunch of poker players who think they know it all. We all played.
That's why I couldn't get a hold of you, Chris.
I was not there.
You were on a bus to Foxwoods.
I was not there. We all played in the 8 p.m. tournament, and at 1 a.m. in the morning, I was the last one of the group still playing and chopped the money with the final four. Then to ensure that my skill was not donkey luck, as the guys would like to think about a girl playing poker, she said, that's in parenthetical, we never said that, I went on to also chop the final four of the next day's 9 a.m. tournament. First of all, I'm impressed that you were playing at 1 a.m. then got up to playing a 9 a.m. tournament. So
I would say Iron Man, but that's offensive. Iron Woman poker
that's,
here.
That's crazy. She said, it was a really great weekend, and I tripled my bankroll. Take care. Well, congrats. That's awesome. And I think she's from Maine. Is that right?
Yes, Christy's from Maine.
So that's kind of a ride, but you know, I'm glad that you made the ride worthwhile. Way to go. Man, chopping back-to-back tournaments. And the fact that she got up to play in that tournament after staying up that late, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't like to sleep a lot, so I could probably do it, but I would not be sharp enough if I ended playing at 1 a.m., and went to bed and woke up for the 9 a.m. I don't think I could be sharp enough to play. I'd be up. I could do it. But I would never put money on me making the final four back-to-back tournaments like that.
Yeah, see, now if Christy had a roommate and then she had slept in, her roommate would have lost two racks and blamed her for it.
Yes.
That's what would have happened. But,
absolutely.
So she got up at 9 a.m. early and went down and played herself, so she couldn't have anybody blaming her for losing money. So that good for you, Christy.
All right, well, very excited about this, Chris. Folks could look for our magazines next week in California.
Man.
All the way out to California. That's a long way for our magazine mules.
Coast to coast.
Carry the magazines out. But where are we in? About, what, 16, 18, 20 rooms, something like that?
Something like 20 rooms out there.
We're working on adding more as we can, but... Yeah. Literally, you could pick up our magazine on the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean.
It's crazy. You know, some listener or reader, you know, pick it up on one and have a picture of him, like, you know, sitting next to the Liberty Bell and then going all the way across over there and then sitting on the Golden Gate Bridge with another copy they picked up at a room over there. That'd
Excellent.
Be cool.
Very good. I like it. And, of course, you know, we'll remind our folks we'll be looking for a few more ambassadors as we continue to expand. Specifically Michigan, Oregon, Washington, and South Dakota. If you live in one of those great states, apply at annieupmagazine.com/ambassadors. Or anywhere else, for that matter. You can go there and apply. And if we have a room for you, we will be happy to contact you.
Yeah, very cool. And you know what else, too? We finished up the audio for our 50K Jacks poker game. Remember that? That 50K buy-in with all those big-name players? And now it's going to be on TV. On my birthday, no less. 11 p.m. September 10th on Cox Cable throughout the Southeast. And it's available on AntiUpMagazine.com and YouTube. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. People can check it out and watch this. And I don't know how much we talked about this on the show, but it was really exciting, I think. And I love doing the TV commentary for all of our teams, but this one particularly I was looking forward to because, you know, you're looking at people, they had $50,000 just to sit down at the table.
Yep.
And that's pretty amazing. I mean, probably the biggest tournament we've done is, well, we did the Jacksonville this year, which was $5,000, but most people satellited into that. No one satellited into the Jacks 50K
cash game. Right.
is people that show up and open up their backpack and dump bricks of money out.
It was pretty cool. And we saw Jason Mercier reload, too. He just pulls out, you know, wads of cash. We're like, oh, man, that's just crazy. I get scared when I, you know, when I get paid and I got a check in my back pocket. You know, I mean, that's just crazy. It's so cool. And what was real exciting, too, was we actually got to call with, you know, big-time pros playing for big-time money. And it was very exciting. And we more or less tried to be comical than analytical, you know. We had some thoughts on what we thought people were thinking, whatever, but how could we really think what these world-class players were thinking? So we just had fun with it. It was a lot of fun.
I'm not going to be the one to tell John Reisner that he should have folded.
Exactly.
The show will also be rebroadcast on some other networks as well, too. It's already aired on Comcast Sportsnet Chicago and Bright House here in Florida. So look for more airings. But, of course, you know, you could check it out on YouTube or on our website. And we also have our our two guest stints on Windy City Poker Championship posted on our website and also on YouTube. So lots of opportunities to laugh at us in a video format.
And you know what, Scott? Now that I understand what it means, I feel like that I am, you know, I can say, please like us on Facebook. Because I know what it means now, and I'm very happy about that. And follow us on Twitter. We get a lot of people following us now. We're near 1,000 or over. I don't know. We're close. We want to get to 1,000 pretty soon.
Yeah, we're closing in on 1,500 on Facebook and closing in on 1,000 for Twitter. So.
Yeah, cool. I mean, we're not pushing it either. You know, we're just casually mentioning it. We could push it.
You could be a milestone liker or follower.
Okay, let's see what happened on the Ante Up news desk this week.
Carbon Poker, the flagship site on the Emerge Gaming Network, has said it will resume accepting U.S. players this month. The network was forced to halt U.S. signups a few months ago when its servers were overloaded by players looking for sites to play on after Black Friday.
That's good. I mean, I guess, right?
Yeah, theoretically, I would imagine that you know, all of the Emerge sites can start accepting U.S. players now. So, you know, it was, to be honest, for the last couple of months, when Emerge pulled out, it's been really difficult to find any place to play. At least Merge gives you some options if you want to wade back into the online market until things get clarified on the
panel. All right, Zynga. Hey.
Where have we heard that?
We've talked about them somewhere. The wildly popular Facebook poker game has been sued for patent infringement by Agincourt Gaming, which says it holds patents on credits-based online gaming and for prize redemption-based on the outcome of gameplay. So, you know, maybe it's a good thing that guy erased his app anyway.
Everybody wants a piece of the Zynga pie now.
Zynga!
All right, and finally, Pocket Fives has started a poker refugee program, Chris, which is assisting U.S. players looking to move to a foreign country in order to continue playing online poker. For a flat fee, Pocket Fives will assist with setting up a foreign bank account, finding housing, and establishing internet service, among other things.
Huh, interesting. I wonder if there's enough people to make that venture worthwhile. Are there enough people really moving to do this?
Price it well, then it doesn't really matter. I think the beginning level starts at $1,000 or something. It's less if you do it as roommates.
Oh, yeah.
Or they have a family plan even, too. So, you know, if your kids aspire to be online poker pros, you can all travel together to Costa Rica. Wow. So, I mean, I imagine, like anything else, they price it that, you know, it's worth it if even to get one, you know. And I think it's being run by an expat that is an agent, real estate agent in Costa Rica right now. So, wow. You know, on the site there and has probably all that stuff at her fingertips, you know.
Yeah, you always wonder who's going to capitalize or how people would capitalize on something like you know, the Black Friday thing, and then here's a good way to, you know, entrepreneur, you know, very good. Kind of cool.
I wonder if you can mention on your Facebook page under application, Poker Refugee.
See, no, I don't understand what that means. Now you got to explain all of that to me someday about Facebook. I don't know any of that stuff. So
baby steps, baby steps.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Ante Up.
Downtown. He's called the Prince of Poker, though no one looking at his resume would have a problem with calling him the King. Scotty Wynn has amassed more than $11 million in tournament winnings, and he owns 5 World Series of Poker bracelets, including the world title in 1998. He's a former WPT champion and considered one of the best all-around players the game has ever known. Thanks for joining us today, Scotty.
Thank you for having me, baby.
You know, we know that on September 24th and 25th, you'll be at the Seminole Casino in Immokalee. That's near Fort Myers in Florida. And you're going to play a couple events down there, including one for Poker Gives. Hey, listen, how important is charity to you? And can you tell us anything about some of the charitable things you've done in your career?
It's very important, you know, to play a charity event because, you know, when you play, when I play, I have I give the fan a chance to play with me. Plus, the prize pool gonna go to the charity, you know. And every time you work for charity, it makes you feel good. You know, you have a chance to put some work out there and make some. Hopefully, I can draw some. The fan, the player, to play. So this way we can make some money for charity, the kid needed, or some, whatever, you know, as long as charity to help people out, and that's what I love to do, you know?
I know you're there for the fans and for the cause, Scotty, but do you also try to win these events, or are you just there to kind of hang out and have fun?
Just hang out and have fun, and hopefully, hopefully I can draw some crowd and player to play. You know, the bigger is the better, you know, for charity, you know. And I always looking forward to play charity event because I have fun with it. It's I'm not looking forward to win or cash in and thing like that. Even if I cash in, you're gonna be 100% gonna go to charity anyway. You know what I mean?
Right.
But the main thing is just like to have fun, to play. You know, just come in and play, not just come in and have fun and play crazy hand and get knocked out and you know, walk away from it. No, you know, I will be there and play the game like supposed to be, you know, and have fun with it. And hopefully I can raise more money for charity, you know?
Yeah. How much do your past struggles in your life motivate you to succeed so that you can give back to those who are less fortunate?
You know, I've been doing this for so many years. You know, baby, you have up and down years and things like that. But poker has made me, so, you know, it don't matter the what. Every year, you know, you fail this year, you get to come back stronger next year. You know, because that's the game I love. That's what I'm made of, you know. So don't matter the what. I don't give up. I'm just come out stronger every year to show people, show the fans, show the players. Scotty still have it, you know.
Yeah.
Because I love the game so much. Sometimes sleep, I dream about it. You know. you know, baby. Because that's what you made of. You know. You just cannot forget. Sometimes you eat, you think about it. You sleep, you think about that. You know how bad you're doing, how good you're doing, what is wrong, what made me fail the World Series, what made me fail the WPT. See, that's those kind of things you need to adjust. You know, you need to sit back and think what is wrong, and then you fix it. You know, and then, you know, you go out there, you play, not just play, but you make it fun for whoever playing with me, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And you know that I'm the best at it, you know, baby? I make people enjoy to play with me, enjoy to beat me or lose to me, you know? So, poker, baby.
Well, speaking of...
Think about, baby.
Well, speaking of still having it, you were once a poker dealer. Do you think you could still pitch the cards if you had to?
Oh yeah, baby. You know I'm so smooth or whatever I do, baby.
We've read a lot about you, and it's well documented that you were actually thrown out of school once for playing too much poker. Were you self-taught, or was there someone who gave you the finer points of the game?
Can you repeat that question again?
You know, we read once that you were thrown out of school for playing too much poker. Did you teach yourself how to play, or did someone else help you with the game?
I teach myself how to play while I was dueling the game. When I dueling the game, I learned from the player checks raise, and when they turn the hand over, and I look and I talk to myself, say like, this guy, if he doing this, he would win the pot. Instead, he lost the pot because he made a wrong move, da 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 da, you know. So
right.
Every day, baby, when I sit down and I do the game, you know, the old day, you don't do just no limit hold'em. The old day, you do all game.
Right.
Stud a better, hold'em, Omaha. So you learn from it, you know. When you concentrate on one thing, you want to be a poker player, you have to learn. You have to see what the player making mistake, who playing good, who playing bad. So you want to focus on the player playing so good. You want to learn from the move, the way he bet, the way he checks raise, the way he call, the way he trap people. So, you know, baby?
Yeah.
That's, I learn everything is from the player, but nobody teach me. I learned silently when I'm dueling. They didn't know that, you see. And I talk to the good player when I'm at the break.
Right.
You know, I come stand and hang out with them, talk to them about a couple hand, and some hand I don't understand, I ask them. And I'm so friendly with all the players, so when I need something, when I have a question, they just like 100% give it to me, you know. But they didn't know the reason I asked, because I want to become one of them or better. And then later on they realize, oh my God, he, you know, look at him now, you know what I mean?
Well, Scotty, you must be a great teacher, because you're the only player who's won the World Series Poker main event title and the World Series of Poker's $50,000 horse title. But what would you consider
the WPT, the main event, baby? Don't forget
okay,
that.
Okay, all right.
WPT, the main event. All right. Don't forget that, baby.
We won't forget that.
I'm the only man do those three. You know that, right?
Yep.
I'm the only man win the main event World Series, the main event WPT, and a 50K horse. There is no second one done that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So which one?
Yeah, two people have WPT and World Series title, but no 50K horse.
So is the horse title, is that your greatest accomplishment or something else?
You know, baby, the longer I live, the more title, the more major tournament out there for me to win. You know, I have one in my mind right now. It's my goal. It's the WSOP Europe. I haven't won that yet. If I win that, baby, I'm gonna become the one and only ever play the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, nobody ever done that.
Would you, if you could, what would be the one piece of poker advice you would give someone?
You know, baby, one piece of good advice for all the young guns, all the upcoming player, is when you play the game, you cannot get personal. You just cannot sit down and hate someone or focus just one player only. You have to focus on the game you play and whoever you playing with. Pick out the weaker one at the table, because every game you go, they always Every game you're sitting down, no matter what game, they always have a couple of weak spots. So focus on that. Just like in the jungle, you know, in a safari, you know, a whole pack of lions. And then they have the 100,000 of wildebeest. What do? They only focus on one. All they have to do is hit that one, and the whole pack would be full. So same thing with poker, baby. When you sit down the game, focus on one, weaker one. All you have to do is beat the guy. You can live. You live good. You can see your family. You know what I mean? You
That's
get
awesome.
What you need. You don't need to kill 3, 4 wildebeest to feed the pack, baby. One.
Well, Scotty, you've got a lot of poker still ahead of you, but when it's all said and done, how would you like to be remembered by the poker community?
You know, baby, when it's all said and done, I want everyone to remember poker getting so big. And so much fun, and kids these days looking up for poker because Scotty win. He made the game fun, enjoyable, the way he laughed, the way he robbed people, smooth. You rob them and they're smiling. You know, baby, that's a hard thing to do. They know I'm robbing them, but they're smiling. You know, baby, you know how hard that is. To make people love you even they know you're robbing them. So, you know, baby, that's what I want everyone to remember, Scotty Vine, you know?
Smooth. That's awesome. All right, well, our last question is, you know, we always wonder how many people, when they have you all in, say, you call, it's going to be all over, baby.
Oh, my God, baby. You know, everywhere I go, don't matter. You know, Paris, London, Australia. I mean, it's like every time they involve with me, when they put this eye in, they always look at me, you call me, it's all over, baby. But see, baby, the difference is when I tell them, you call me, it's all over, baby. But when they say that to me, they say, like, you call me, it's all over, baby. And I say it back to them, if I call you, baby, it's all over for you, baby. You see, baby?
That is awesome.
I mean, there is no line. They can copy me, and I don't have answer for them. That's how... Scotty went special, baby. You know what I mean?
Hey, Scotty, thanks so much, man. Hey, we really appreciate your time, and we look forward to seeing you in September down at the Seminole Casino near Fort Myers, man. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
You got it, baby. I'm promise you, when I'm there, I make it fun. I make everybody gonna enjoy when I'm there. That's the way I am, you know, baby.
Hey, this is Hoyt Corkins, and I'm listening to Annie Up.
Family Hand of the Week this week, Chris.
Family Hand of the Week? Are they, like, refugees? They're playing in, you know, another foreign country or something?
Yes, the whole family picked up, got on a boat, moved to Kyrgyzstan. And play this hand and send it in again. No. Seriously. What it is, it's one of our longtime listeners was playing at Running Aces up in Minnesota.
Okay.
With his wife at a 2-4 limit hold'em game. And sent in a hand that she played.
Wow.
All right. So it's, I guess it's not really, it's second hand, but it's not like telephone, you know. Oh, my gosh. She's doing what for prom? He was actually there to see it, but he just, you know, was the one that typed in all the pretty characters to send to us.
Oh, okay.
She just did all the poker playing.
Okay.
All right, so he's a longtime listener, and he says even actually going back through all the St. Pete Time shows.
Hmm.
Mostly because he remembers liking listening to all the nervous ums in the Jen Harmon interview. OMG, OMG, it's Jen Harmon.
You'll notice that Scott still does that.
Yeah. I remember how excited you were to talk to Jen Harmon.
I was. I was pretty excited.
And I remember how terrible I am at speaking in general. So. And he also liked tracking how high pitched Scott's voice gets as he tells a story about getting molested by hookers outside the IP while trying to get the maximum EV out of his coupon book.
Oh, my God.
Good times, good times.
Memories.
He says he used to play them in the car and force his wife to listen to them. And aside from her yelling at him about forcing her to listen to a poker podcast, she also liked the show, especially while shaking her head and wondering how many more times Columbo can misplay a small pocket pair out of position. Taking us all down, man.
Man, we're all going down. Pretty sure he's going to have a comment about O'Malley.
All right, so he sent it into the hand a week, and here's the setup. It's a 9 to 10 handed, 2 to 4 limit hold'em, and running aces in Minnesota. The lowest stakes available. Thank gosh.
Yeah.
2-4 is already brutal enough. Let's not go down to the 1-2 level. He says he hasn't played live in over a year, but the wife and a friend of hers convinced me to go. Last few times he was at aces, I did fairly well at limit hold'em, and one weird limit hold'em 08 mix game. Oh, very nice. Where every hand was triple straddled. And people wonder why I called to the river to suck out with a gut shot when I was always getting 12 to 1 no matter what.
Oh, my God. Of course, why do we care how he's doing? It's for his wife. It's his wife's hand. So we don't care about his... Tell me about your wife's accolades, buddy.
All right, he goes on to say his wife, as far as he knows, never played poker for money. She likes blackjack, never tournament, and never played live. And here she is in the game, Chris.
All right.
All right. Here is in the middle position. Oh, I'm sorry. This is our actually. He's in the hand as well too for a little bit.
But, okay.
The seminal part of the hand is her. All right. So he's in middle position, undergun plus two, open limps with ace of hearts, deuce of hearts. It says the table's super loose, super passive. It sounds unlike any 2-4 game I've ever played. So often if a player open limped, it meant the standard 4 to 60 callers. More importantly, he was stuck. The wife limped behind, cut off limp, small blind limp, big blind check, standard 5 to the flop, pot $10.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Flop comes ace of clubs, jack of clubs, 9 of diamonds, and we'll pause to appreciate you for ordering the cards properly so I didn't have to. he goes on to say it's not really what he wanted to see since I've seen a lot of ace rags shown down, and he had the raggiest of aces, small blind and big blind checked. Thought about betting to see if by some miracle no one had an ace, but I checked, hoping it would check around. The wife bet, Chris.
Oh.
Here's where she jumps in the hand, all right? Cutoff called, small blind folded, and big blind check raised. I don't know what we call him. He's not our hero. Our hero's husband?
Our hero witness.
Hero witness. Hero witness thought it was odd unless he checked preflop with something like ace-9 to Cosenza, jack-9, or maybe 9-9 set mining, but there are two players behind me, so I folded. Good. Because now we want to talk about your wife.
In a nice way.
Yeah, absolutely. So the wife calls, cutoff folds, pot's $20. All right, so now, remember, we're taking this hand now from his point of view without knowing any of the hole cards.
Hmm.
All right, a little bit of a twist.
All right.
Turn is the jack of spades. So our board now is ace of clubs, jack of clubs, 9 of diamonds, jack of spades. And our, I forgot what we call him. Hero witness, right?
Hero witness.
Hero witness didn't think the wife had a jack, but maybe the big blind did. But the big blind checks, and the wife checks behind. I'll pause for him. But I didn't get it, so that's all right. He thought this was very strange. Why would an ace or jack check the turn? If the big blind had an ace, he'd have to bet and fold to a raise. Wait, nobody ever folds a 2-4. He'd probably bet, and for sure bet a jack after check-raising the flop. Maybe he had a flush draw with a 9, but I would have expected him to call with a flush draw on the flop. Maybe he had a monster, 9-9, or jack-jack. Jack-jack would not too likely, but possible on the flop. Queen-10? 10-8? The wife's chuck was weird, too! Maybe she had the raggy ace and was looking for a cheap showdown. She should bet the turn to get rid of a flush draw, but she's new. Pot's $20. What do we think about all that?
Well, the last thing he said about bet the turn to get rid of a flush draw is not going to happen. We just said no one folds at $4. We have a flush draw that her bet isn't going to get anybody out. I don't know how his wife plays. It sounds like she's very, very novice. So I can't even begin to imagine what she has with that check on the turn. So I think the guy is a flush draw. If he had a jack, he would have bet it. He would have protected it. If he had a decent ace, he would have bet it, protected. If he had a 9 and a flush draw, he would have bet it because he's got a monster hand and a pair. So I think the guy has a flush draw. I have no idea what his wife has. She could have a 9. Maybe she has a 9 and, you know, like 9-8 or something. I don't know. But I think the check raise kind of makes sense if it's a flush draw because he's trying to get more money in the pot, maybe get a free card in a turn. I don't know. I think he has a flush draw. I don't know what he has.
This is a true mystery here because the word protection should never come up in 2/4.
Right, you know what I mean. But at least make them pay.
Make money.
Right? Yeah.
Make profit. But you know, I don't think you generally want to bet your draws in 2/4 limit. You know, because you're going to get paid off when you hit them. So there's no reason to try to build too much. So. I guess he has a flush draw, or he could have a straight draw as well, too, but I don't really understand the check raise because you're out of position, so you're not really getting a free card.
Right, right.
So that doesn't make sense. You know, maybe he's trying to... I mean, I do check raise often in these low-limit games to kind of let people know that maybe I have a bigger hand, but if that's the case, why check the turn? It really is a head-scratcher on a lot of levels.
Maybe he's a no-limit player, and no-limit players, a lot of them... at least beginners like to check raise their flush draws, and maybe that's what he was thinking, and he check raised it, and now that's why he checks the turn, because another jack comes and he checks because he might want to just check call a $4 bet if she has three jacks, and he's still trying to hit his flush. I feels like a flush draw to me. It still does, because he would bet that turn if he has anything other than that draw. There's no reason not to bet there.
Right, and I could even more easily put our hero here on a flush draw or a straight draw, because you know, it's that one more bet when it's raised, that's all right. And then on the turn, you know, I'm not going to bet my flush draw here because we know we're not going to get this guy to fold
right.
That bet. So might as well just check and hope to hit and, you know, save ourselves a bet on the end if we miss and, you know, not get into anything in here. So,
So it could be two flush draws, possibly.
Could be two flush draws. And in fact, that happens quite a lot in 2/4 limit.
Yeah.
You know, people like to play any two suited cards. I mean, we're getting ready to go do a poker 101 class tonight, and I guarantee you, Chris, when we get to the lab portion, we're going to have people, when they have them turn over the cards at the end and we analyze it, there's going to be four people that called with two suited cards.
Yep.
King, Trey, or something, and they're going to go, what's suited?
Yeah.
And we're going to have to explain to them why that doesn't matter. So 2/4 limit, you know, they don't have the advantage of having two well-schooled low-limit players, I guess. They're to tell them not to play their flush draws.
So it could be that.
I'm going to put my money on competing flush draws here.
All right. That sounds. I mean, just again, what hand would not bet the turn there that's made? So it's got to be something like that, I think.
All right. Well, the river is the four of hearts. So our final board is the ace of clubs, jack of clubs, nine of diamonds, jack of spades, four of hearts. And as our hero witness says, brick! But the big blind bets! Says the wife tanks. Thought she might, didn't see the bet, so I said $4 to go, and she waved me off like the pest I was.
Yeah, keep your mouth shut. Two people to a hand.
$1 or $2 for the hero. Put that man in his place.
You're not in the hand anymore. Stop talking.
Our hero witness says, I was sure she didn't have an ace. She thought a few more seconds and called. Pot's $28 down, minus the rake. And he asked you, what do we think the big blind had?
If we had the flush draw, he's betting because he knows he can't win. So maybe a, let's see, ace, jack,
that's
nine.
That's a $4 bet to hope that it scares off.
Seven, eight of clubs, maybe, something like that. Could be. It could even be something like king, 10 of clubs. But I think he would have bet that. Because that's a pretty good draw. But something like that, some sort of club draw.
Okay. And our hero witness is pausing for various thoughts and such until Chris says, for God's sakes, it's 2/4 limit. What's the answer?
Yes, for God's sakes, it is 2/4 limit. What is the answer?
The big blind showed 8 of clubs, 5 of clubs.
Hey, yeah, that makes sense. It's a flush draw. Not a great one, but he limped with 8-5, so you got to expect that.
That's a crazy little check raise there, though.
Yeah, it is. But again, it just feels like the guy is playing the limit hold'em.
Yeah, it might work at 10-20 limit. It's not going to work at 2-4
right. Which they don't have there, actually. They don't have no limit hold'em in Minneapolis, so
or
Minnesota.
True.
But just feels like that's the type of player he is. They have no limit, but there's a limit. You know what I mean? It's like spread limit.
No limit with a limit.
Yeah.
So now our hero witness wants to say, what did the wife table?
Oh, my God. Oh, man. I have king of clubs, 10 of clubs. No, that'd be a royal flush draw. I don't think she would have had that. Jeez, I don't know. It's got to be a flush draw. Maybe it's a I don't know. I don't know. Something that didn't pair.
Something that didn't pair.
Two clubs. I don't know how she did it, but somehow maybe just like a king seven of clubs or something. Maybe she saw a king club seven of clubs and liked it.
Okay. Wife tables, king of diamonds, queen of spades.
Wow.
And it says the dealer took a few seconds moving the cards around in front of him until he could figure out what the hell happened.
Wow.
I'm sorry. This is funny. I was trying to figure it out too. The big blind looked like someone just kicked him right in the fresh appendectomy scar. And some other people looked confused as well. I didn't know. Was she a genius or a donk?
Wow. I'm not going to call his wife a donk, but clearly she is an experience, I think. I don't know how she calls a check raise there with just a gut shot and two unders to the ace. And then on the turn, I like her check. You know, obviously, but then the call on the river, she's calling with just king high. I don't think she knew this guy had a hand. You know, I think she just didn't know any better. Thought there was too much money out there to fold and thought maybe her hand was good. I don't know. I don't think she's a genius, though. I don't know. But I'm not saying anything about his wife because she might be listening. So, hey, you're a wonderful person, and that was a genius of a play.
Great pot.
It was only $4, so...
later, our witness said he, after he folded a few more seven highs... He thought back on the hand and realized she had to know exactly what he had, Chris.
Really?
If he checked the turn, he probably didn't have an ace or a jack or better. If he had a nine, he wouldn't bet the river. So then he either had a flush draw, which only wins with a nine of clubs, or a straight draw, which loses or chops. It took me a few minutes to figure it out, way longer than she took the call. Therefore, I told her she was a genius.
Did she admit to being a genius, or did she say, yeah, no, I didn't know what
to do? Let me go on here.
Oh, okay.
later, I asked her about the call again and learned that she is much a better player than I am at reading people. When she sat down, the big blind was rebuying for $100. She basically folded for two rounds and watched the table and figured out who was strong, who was weak, who played every hand, and who to avoid. Who does that, Chris? Everybody should. No one does. She also learned that this was this guy's fourth rebuy, based off of table talk. How do you lose over $300 at 2-4? She also saw him at least once try to buy the river with junk, so when he bet the river after checking the turn, to her it just looked desperate. She said, quote, I have nothing, but my nothing is better than his nothing, and it's worth a bet to find out if I'm right. In the genius versus donk argument, she says donk, and I still say genius.
Well, he misled us because he made it sound like she'd never played the game. He didn't even know she had played ever before. So, I mean, to me, it's hard for us to be like, oh, that's a genius play when she doesn't know what she's doing. So now apparently she knows what she's doing, and that's a great call. I don't know if I could have made that call.
Well, you know, no, I don't think I could either. But, you know, this is it's a great Barry Greenstein story, and I can't remember it all, but I remember he calling with something like ridiculous, like seven high, because the only way his opponent's story made sense was that he would be on a straight draw, and the only straight draw would mean that he had like 5-6.
Yeah.
And it missed, so his 7 or 8 or whatever he had to be best, even though it seems like a ridiculous call to make, right?
Right.
I love that story. And that's exactly here is, you know, it's a little more difficult to do with a 2-4 limit because he very likely could have also had a bad ace.
Yeah.
And was scared about the jack and checked, and then when he didn't bet, then he's betting that on the end. You know, assuming that his ace was probably good at that point. But it is a good reminder of looking at the board and remembering if you put somebody on a flush draw or a straight draw, you know, there's certain, particularly a straight draw, there's certain card combinations that you have to have. If it misses, then you don't have to have even a pair to win. Flush draw is a little more difficult in this situation. But she had a king, so, you know, at that point it would, at best, would be a split, you know, if he had a king as well, too. I think, I mean, where the kickers play, he had two jacks and ace. Yeah, 4 and 9. Yeah, kicker might have played. But no, I think it's a good reminder of that.
Yeah, and we didn't usually get limit hands on the show, so that was good to see. And, you know, and to me, it really did feel like this guy just isn't a very good player, and he was... You know, maybe a no-limit player who got frustrated and went over to the limit game to try to figure it out, hey, maybe I can stop losing so much money, and clearly he's not. So, you know, it just feels like that might have been what this guy was doing with that check raise, with that terrible flush draw. And, you know, because a lot of no-limit players will play 8-5 in position, and he wasn't in position. So, you know, I don't know what this guy was thinking, but apparently the suited cards are gold to him. You know, their eyes just light up when they see two cards that seem suited, no matter what they are.
It happens at 2-4.
Well, I'm going to go on record, and his wife's a genius.
All right, yeah, so I think we have three geniuses, and the only one that thinks that she's a donk is her.
Yeah,
so, you know.
Back to genius.
But maybe some swag will convince her that she is much more of a savant than she thinks she
is. Does she get the swag, or does he get the swag?
Heck yeah, she gets the swag.
He better give it to her. We're going to find out.
Nothing but turn his hand into a hilariously written email, which I have tremendous respect for, but... I do think it's a little pushy when people specifically ask for swag items, and but he has a good reason for wanting some Got Raz stuff, if we still have it, which we don't.
No, we don't.
His latest rescue dog was named Raz because he looks old, sad, and confused. And when his wife tricked me into getting him, it cost me a bunch of money without me really knowing what happened. Seemed totally appropriate.
That's hilarious.
All right, well, he goes by Moo, so maybe we'll put a second piece of swag in the mail, so he has something as well too. But we will be happy to send our true hero in this hand a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
The shirt should say, "My husband speaks when he shouldn't."
He's a pest and he knows it.
All right, I want to thank Scotty Wynn, baby, for being on the show today. Had a lot of fun with him, and I'm sure the people in Philadelphia had a lot of fun with him too. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.